All right, Mary Lewis, University of Georgia, and this is the preliminary work on assessing my genetic compatibility within and among Asclepias species, and hopefully the creation of novel cultivars for the floriculture market. Now, what I'm presenting today are about half of the projects that I have going on at this time. They all revolve around Asclepias, but these are the two that are the farthest along right now and have the most in common. So, ta-da, you get half of my work today. Woo. On to the first bit. This is my hybridization, and the goal for this going in was to see if we can have any natural hand pollination progeny that could arise from any crosses. And how we went about this process is we decided to use Asclepias tuberosa as the maternal parent, mostly because it's the one that's most commonly used in the industry, and it has more of the qualities that we're looking for. Has branching, good flowers that last a long time, but we decided to cross them with 8 other species. We are pollen donors. Those were Asclepias syriaca, Speciosa incarnata, Perbrassens, Viridis fascicularis, Vertella, and Curassavica. Yes, that's a lot of crosses. Hang with me. We decided to only use about 3 or 4 flowers per floret to make a cross with at a time. The 3 or 4 all opened at about the same time, so it was the best ones to use to make sure we didn't receive any unwanted crosses. How this process works. Don't know if you guys know this, but Asclepias doesn't have any loose pollen grains. They're all compact into like pollinia, which is like the big old packets. And so as you look up to the figure up on the right, that is when you take out a pollinia, it has this really strange looking shape. And the process by which you make the cross is that this is your stigmatic slit. Think of it kind of like a door. You would open up the flaps, then you would take your pollinia and you would draw it up the door so that it sits right in between, and then you would close the slits on either side. Assuming you've done that correctly, then you hopefully have a successful pollination attempt. What we did just to make sure that there weren't any accidental crosses, not that you could really have an accidental cross with this complicated of a reproductive structure, we did make sure to bag our florets before and then after we made our crosses just to cover all of our bases. About halfway through this process, I got sick and tired of trying to make hand pollinations. So we started trying to develop a solution-based pollination method. We'll get to that in a wee bit. That's a tale of woe, but it's fine. And as of right now, we have, of the successful crosses that we have, we're just going to let them mature till their natural bursting openness with what they do. Because if I don't have to go in and save them, I'm not going to mess with what's broke. The reason why we chose the species that we did is that about a few years, years ago, there was a group that went through, God bless them, and they went and they found all the highly polymorphic sites of like 98 different species of Asclepias, because it has like 126 here in the U.S. itself. And they divided it up into clades to kind of show you genetically how similar they were in relation to one another. So what we did is the red star is representative of Asclepias tuberosa, and so we chose about half of our species from clades that were very close to this plant, and then as you can see all the way up to the left here, we also chose some that weren't, just to see what would happen, because again, there really has been no work done on this plant at all. So I'm like, you know, we'll just see what happens. Who knows? It could be fun. Famous last words. So, picture on the left is a close-up of what the pollinia look like when you remove them from the flower itself. I can see your squinting faces. Yes, it's that bad in person too. It's great. So that brought to apparent need of, let's see if we can make this process a wee bit easier before we all go blind. Based on one singular paper that was done before I was born, they found that if you put all of these polynia into a 30% sucrose solution, it was the best way to store all the polynia to then have a successful germination rate later down the line. So they said, well, what the heck? We'll just take that solution. We'll take our polynia, we'll mash them up, suspend them, put them into a hypodermic needle, and then basically shoot up our plants. It was great. So we have tried varying concentrations of polynia to solution, and unfortunately, we have had absolutely no success as of right now. But I'm not going to give up on this thing, because some of the crosses that we have to make, the stigmatic slits, are not the same size. Some of them are wonderful and are like 2 centimeters in length, so you can actually see them. And some of them are like 0.45 centimeters, and you can't see them. It's awful. So we're still working on this part. But as of right now, here are the crosses that have been made. Incarnon and fascicularis were the first two plants to go into flower, and of course have the most crosses made on them. We were having absolutely no success up until this point, so you can see that we then did some selfs just to see if it was user error or if the plants just weren't enjoying the crosses. It was at this point that we also mixed things up a wee bit, because as the literature about this plant is so obscure and so old and no one has really used it, we decided to change how we were doing our hand pollinations. So before, we would open up the doors of the stigmatic slit and then just put your polynia smack dab and close them. But we thought, what would happen if we removed the polynia, inverted it 90 degrees, and then just slid it right into the stigmatic slit, more unlike a key and a lock? What would be the results after that point? So then we started making crosses this way, and last week, all the species on the right-hand side came into bloom. So love you guys, but I would really love to be home right now making those crosses instead of here, because we're having successes now. Happy days. Of course, you will see that we are having crosses between purpurascens and hertella to some extent, but the real point that I want to just bring to your attention here is that if you look down at the tuberosa bit, you can see that when we were originally making our crosses using the method that is described in all the literature, our success rate was 1%. But using it with the lock and key method that we have tried, we're having about a 10% success rate, which I know doesn't sound all that great to you guys, but to me it's fantastic. As you know, we're about at 7,000 crosses right now. I'm just happy to have something to show for it. And luckily, the crosses that have taken are taking very well at this point. And again, the reason why we think these are the ones that have taken successfully is because they are the green stars. They're about within the same clade, whereas the fascicularis and the incarnata were much farther removed. So that's why we think we're not seeing a lot of success. Now, if we ever get a chance where I do have some hybridization successes that look like they're about to abort, I need to have an embryo rescue protocol to go save all of my hard work. And of course, no one's ever done work in this area either, so it's fun. We decided to use Asclepias tuberosa as like our model plant, and we started out with fully mature seeds, and we'll work backward in time, but you know, I decided to start with the easiest possible way and go from there. We started with three media types, MS, half MS, and woody plant. After we excise our embryos from the seeds, they went into dark stratification for about 3 days. And then after their root initials formed, then we transplanted them into their cute little individualized cups. Yes, they are, or no, they are not Starbucks cups. They look like them, but they're not. And as of right now, the current timeline for these plants is that about day seven is when I see a successful root initial begin to develop, and I can transplant them into their mature cups. And then by day 60, they are pretty much all, for the most part, about that size and are transitioned into our greenhouse and, you know, brought back into normal greenhouse conditions very slowly, but they're there. How we were trying to measure which media was the best was through average root lengths, and this has changed like 4 times within the last 2 weeks because we spread out by each of our reps, and as we have found, half MMS does seem to be the best. Do not take into consideration all the points of day 50 because, again, not all of our plants have reached day 50, so it's not like our plant shrunk. It's just not quite complete yet. But half MMS does seem to be the best by a large portion, and that is the media types that also seems to bring more plants to maturity than the others. So in conclusion, for our hybridization work, the inverted hand pollinations are by far down and away the best. Happy days. Our successful crosses are from similar clades. Our successful seed pods going forward, we will collect once they finally bust wide open. We will collect the seed, put them through cold stratification for about 30 days or so, seed them out, and then we actually get to begin evaluations of the progeny, hopefully in the next, like, 3 months? Probably 5 months, but three months, just to be nice. And then my goal going forward with this project is, again, to see if I can try and perfect the solution-based pollinations, because, Lord have mercy, I'm going to be blind by the end of this if I can't figure out a way to make this a wee bit easier. For the embryo rescue side, of course, as of right now, half MMS will be the one type we will take continuing forward. We're still working out the best way to harden off all of these seedlings in the greenhouse. Again, no one's done any work on this, so it's like a new frontier. Lovely. And the next goal is start to be using younger and younger pods to see at which point our current methodology does not work, and then to see how we would need to alter and adjust that so that we could hopefully, at the end of this, start to save embryos that are not really far along, which is when you would expect them to abort. And then, once we have all that figured out, then I can actually start saving some of the crosses that aren't taking. Fun times. But thank you. Goes out to all of our supporters and for those who have donated to my research. And with that, are there any questions? Yes.
Where are those cups that you're using?
That's a great question. I know that they're called like phylogen cups, but that's what our lab uses, and what they're like, Mary, this is your standard, this is what you're going to use. We prefer them over the magenta boxes because I need a lot of them, and the process of trying to go through sterilization of each new set of magenta boxes, I don't have time. So they're all single use. They come to me completely sterilized, and it's perfect. And they look like Starbucks cups. Yes, dear.
How long does it take to make one cross?
Your question is, is how long did it take me when I first began this process, or how long does it take me now? Okay, now I can probably get about 2 or 3 pollinations in a minute. I'm becoming a beast, especially when it took about 1.5 minutes for one the first time around. The key is, a lot of times, the age of the flower, the older it is, like day 4 or 5, the easier the stigmatic slit comes apart, and the more receptive it is to the pollinia going in. However, we find that the younger the flower is, the greater the chance of success that a cross will occur. So, depending on the age of your plant, depends on how fast they go. Yeah. Any other questions?
I have no time for
all the
questions, but...
Okay. Fantastic.